Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, guys? Week number 15 for our beloved Chicago Bears. And you'd think that for a team that started 1-5 or 1-6, I think 1-5, something like that. 1-5 because we beat... beat the Raiders week 7. So a team that started 2-5 wouldn't be talking about playoffs or meaningful football in mid-December. But the Bears are not completely out of the playoff race yet. We're not eliminated at this point. That's a good and a bad thing for the NFC because a 5-8 team that's only one game out of the playoff race at this point is not necessarily a good thing. But, not too bad because, you know, like I said, we keep winning, then the thing gets interesting. We'll talk about that here in News and Notes in just a moment. But we got the Browns this weekend. We have to win this game if we want to have a chance in the last three because next Sunday we got the Cardinals at home. The following Sunday we got the Falcons at home. That's two dome teams coming to Chicago in December, in late December. That's won't be good for either of them. So, you know, or at least you wouldn't think it would be anyway. And then we go up to Lambeau to finish things off with the Packers. And with the Packers being the 7th seed right now, and if the Bears put themselves in this spot, that last game in Lambeau could be for the final seed in the NFC. Now, wouldn't that be something? You know, the Bears 8-8 going into this thing with the playoffs on the line and see what happens from there. But we got Thomas Stargell from the Battle of Ohio podcast going to talk to us about the Browns, and we talk about the AFC, the playoff race, and everything. We talk about the Bears and the their unique draft position going into this offseason. We had some technical difficulties. So you'll hear a point in the interview where we switch from talking on the StreamYard feed to I just ended up calling him on the phone because been having some issues with the internet down here in the basement. I don't know if it's the weather or whatever the situation is. We're just not getting a great signal down here. So doing interviews has been rough the last couple of weeks, but you'll definitely hear. You'll hear the hit sound in there, and that will be the transition from he and I talking on the web to us talking on the phone. So just wanted to give you a heads up on what that noise meant and why all of a sudden the conversation sounds different. But thankfully, it's still just an audio podcast right now. I haven't graduated to video just yet, so... But it's like the StreamYard link is the easiest way to hook up with people online these days for the interview. So I just do that and record the audio. So a little behind the scenes for you guys. But I just wanted to make you aware of that so you're not wondering what the hell that was. But we're having some internet issues. You hear him, you know, kind of frazzle in and out for a couple of times. And then finally we make the transition over to the phone. I give up on the internet and... you know, we switch over there. So anyway, guys, lots of interesting things to talk about. We got our injury report, and the Browns even more banged up than we are. And our injury list only has 6 people on it. Theirs has 16. So, even though the Browns are 8-5 and they look to be the favorites coming into this, the Bears appear to be healthier and playing good football right now. So who knows how this is going to break. So let's go ahead and dive into it. This is the Week 15 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground, so let's get to it. Hang up the telephone. I hear the dial tone ringing out loud and I don't Week 15, 8-5 8-5 Browns, 5-8 Bears meeting up in Cleveland on Sunday. I'm excited for this game, man. I really want to know, you know, how the Bears are going to get into this. How much the injuries are going to affect the Browns? Can Justin Fields shake off the nightmare that was his first regular season trip to Cleveland? And you know, can we get enough offense generated against this top rated defense of Cleveland to get the job done? It's all lots of questions that the Bears need to answer this week and answer effectively if we want to still be talking about the Bears and their waning playoff hopes a week from now. You know, when we preview Bears Cardinals, do we still want to be talking about our playoff hopes, or are we just kind of like, yeah, maybe we should just let these other games go so we can, you know, keep that top five pick or something stupid like that? Because I want the Bears to win, man. I don't want to wait all week long just to watch them lose again. To hell with that. What am I, a Panthers fan? So, but, you know, let's go ahead and dive into the news and notes. And, you know, unfortunate news coming out of Halas Hall yesterday on Wednesday, and that is, or maybe it was Tuesday, but Yannick Ngakoue, you know, our pass rushing specialist that, you know, kind of struggled early on, but really has kind of come on in the last few weeks, especially with the addition of Montez Sweat, is done for the season. Suffered an ankle injury against the Lions at some point. I don't remember when it was that happened. Maybe it's because the Bears rotate their pass rushers as much as they do, a lot more than I would like, to be completely honest with you. But, you know, maybe that's why you didn't notice that Ngakoue wasn't out there or anything. But he broke his ankle against the Lions, and he is done for the season. Finishes the season with, I think, 4 sacks on the year. But he'd gotten 2 just in the last 2 weeks against the Vikings and against the Lions, and he was also doing a lot better job of getting pressure and quarterback hits and things like that as well. It's amazing how much Montez Sweat has benefited the pass rush and just the defense. They're really, you know, feeding off of him and everything that he's been bringing to the table. But unfortunately, Yannick's season is done. Interested to see if the Bears will bring him back. You know, maybe they'll bring him back if he if he cuts his salary next season. The Bears got him for 1 year and $10 million this season. Maybe if he's somewhere in the $7 or $8 million range next season, maybe the Bears bring him back for an encore. Because he and Montez Sweat, I thought, were a really good pair. But that's, of course, if the Bears don't end up using that second first-round pick on a pass rusher in the draft this year. So we'll see how it goes with Ngakoue. I mean, this is a guy that waited until training camp to sign with the team, probably because, you know, as a veteran going into his 8th season this year, who wants to go through training camp if you don't have to, or go through the off season, you know, nonsense if you don't have to? So he's a pass rusher. All he has to do is get around the edge or get to the quarterback. There's not a whole lot to learn there, but it's unfortunate that Yannick is done for the season. Really would have loved to have him for this stretch run here in the last month of the season. So speaking of the injury report, let's just go ahead and get that out of the way. A couple of guys banged up, but nowhere near as many as the Browns. Jaquan Brisker and DJ Moore kind of headlined the names on the list this week. Brisker was limited yesterday on Wednesday with a groin injury, did not practice today on Thursday, so I would call that trending in the wrong direction as far as that goes. Dylan Cole, one of our special teams linebackers, was full participation today, missed practice yesterday for personal reasons. DJ Moore, who was in and out of the game against Detroit on Sunday, turns out it was an ankle injury that he suffered during the game. He didn't practice yesterday, was limited today on Thursday, so that would be trending in the right direction. Maybe he'll be full go, but I don't have any worries about DJ Moore not playing on Sunday. Equanimeous St. Brown, that had the pectoral injury that kept him out of the game against the Lions, has not practiced yet this week with that pectoral injury. And here's your weekly Mercedes Lewis rest on Thursday. So he didn't practice today. And then Noah Sewell, the rookie linebacker, brother of Penei Sewell, who we just beat this past Sunday out of Detroit, limited with that knee injury. So maybe he's tweaked it or aggravated it a little bit. But that's it for us. Of course, like I said, of course, Jaquan Brisker, DJ Moore, those are the starters in there. Jaquan trending down, DJ Moore trending up. So we'll see how that all shakes out after practice tomorrow or today for those of you listening to this on Friday and everything. The Browns, on the other hand, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Oh, I shorted them. They're, I put too many. There's 16. I said 16. It's 14. Excuse me. But, you know, starting guard, Joel Bitonio is dealing with a knee injury. Amari Cooper has got ribs. Jordan Elliott, defensive tackle, dealing with concussion, hasn't practiced this week. Jerome Ford and Kareem Hunt, their top two running backs, both limited in practice with various injuries. Myles Garrett dealing with a shoulder injury, but he was full participation today. Their tight end, David Njoku, dealing with a knee injury, has not practiced yet. Ogbo Okoronkwo, defensive end, suffering a pectoral injury. He's hasn't practiced yet. Ethan Pochich, their center with a stinger, hasn't practiced yet. You get the idea. Juan Thornhill, starting free safety. Anthony Walker, middle linebacker, limited this week. Denzel Ward, one of the best corners in the league, limited with a shoulder injury. And that's just the guys on the injured list. And that's not counting guys like Grant Delpit, who just signed an extension with the Browns going into last week's game against the Jaguars. He's on IR with a groin injury. He's basically done for the regular season. So, I mean, it's and of course, you know, Deshaun Watson, Nick Chubb, you know, and other guys of that ilk that are on injured reserve and done for the season. And we're still playing against the team that beat the Jaguars last week and is, you know, has a firm grasp on a playoff spot at the moment in second place in the AFC North behind the 10-3 Ravens, who are number one in the AFC right now. So, yeah, despite all of that, this is still a team that's got a firm grasp on a playoff spot and is looking to hang on to it with the Bears coming into town this weekend. So two more things before we move on to talking to Thomas about the game. There was a video posted online this week, or today actually, asking tailgating Bear fans who they wanted the Bears to take with the number one overall pick. And you know what? You know, and of course, maybe there was some editing or they didn't put everybody that they talked to in the video, but the video itself, there was a consensus, and it was not Caleb Williams. It wasn't Drake May or anybody else for that matter. It was Marvin Harrison Jr., the wide receiver. So, you know, listen to your fans, Ryan Poles and you know, Kevin Warren and the guy and the decision makers, Ian Cunningham, if you're still our assistant GM during the draft this year, take the wide receiver, the generational talent that everybody says is like the one can't-miss prospect at wide receiver since Calvin Johnson. How about we take that guy and have him be on our team and everything? Let's keep Justin Fields, give him Marvin Harrison, maybe throw in another offensive tackle or go get that other pass rusher on the other side of Montez Sweat, and let's keep rolling here. So I would much rather prefer to do that, and according to this video, so would other Bear fans as well, because nobody was talking about quarterbacks in that video. It was all about Marvin Harrison Jr. and come to Chicago, Marvin, you'll love it here kind of thing. And I fully concur with that. So, and then last but not least, I saw I guess you would call it a meme or whatever online of the Bears playoff scenario. And the playoff scenario is simple. Number one, we have to win out. So we have to win the last four games of the regular season. We got this week, we have Cleveland, Next week, we got Arizona at home, then Atlanta at home, and then we finish in Lambeau with Green Bay. We got to win all four. That has to be done. Then the other things, and we need a lot of help here, but the other things that we need the Vikings to lose three of the next four games. And here's the thing. Two of those three games are against, they haven't played the Lions yet. They played the Lions for the first time next weekend, the week 16, and then they finish with the Lions week 18. So they got the Bengals this Saturday at Cincinnati, and Cincinnati has gotten over the hangover of losing Joe Burrow. That Jake Browning quarterback of theirs is playing really well the last couple of weeks. And as we've seen, the Vikings, not so much. So I was like, I like the Bengals in that game, so that's good. Then they're playing the Lions. I like the Lions in that one. Then they have the rematch with Green Bay in Minnesota this time. That's 50-50. But then they have the Lions again. There is not a bad chance of, I would say it's about 50-50. The Vikings might lose all four. So let's go ahead and check that one off. I think we got a good shot at that one happening. The next step, the Rams and the Seahawks have to lose twice in the next four games. So you got Seattle has Philadelphia. I think that's a loss. Tennessee, that's a win. Pittsburgh, I don't know. And then Arizona. So, yeah, I see 2-2 at least there. I'd see 2-2 in those last four games for the Seahawks. So that's losing twice, so that helps us. Then you got the Rams. They got the Commanders. They're going to win that game. Then you got the Saints. Oof, I didn't write down if that was at home or away, but, yeah. Then you got the Giants. Not looking good. And then the 49ers. Oh, thank God. Well, there's at least one loss there. But that's also week 18 when the 49ers might have everything locked up and they're not playing anybody in that game, basically gifting it to the Rams. So that one, I don't like at all. Those first three are all winnable for the Rams. And that fourth one might be a gift from the 49ers because they've got everything locked up and don't need to play that last season. So that might be a hurdle we don't get to clear. Then the last thing that needs to happen is that the three teams in the NFC South other than Carolina, so Tampa Bay, New Orleans, and Atlanta, two of those three teams have to lose twice. So, and I love our chances here, number one, because these three teams are a mess, period. All three of them are 6-7 right now. Tampa Bay is in first place because they just beat the Falcons for first place this past Sunday to go from 5-7 and 6-7 to take over first place. They play Green Bay this Sunday. Then they have Jacksonville, New Orleans, and Carolina. I see two losses there. I would actually say that Green Bay and Jacksonville are probably those losses. They beat New Orleans earlier this season in New Orleans, so I like their chances to beat them in Tampa Bay, and then, Carolina, that's, come on. New Orleans, they have the Giants this weekend, and they have the Rams, the Buccaneers, and the Falcons. And the beautiful thing about this, about these teams needing to lose twice, is that these three teams are playing each other over the last 4 weeks. So, you know, New Orleans is playing both Atlanta and Tampa Bay in the last 4 weeks. That's definitely helpful. So the Giants, the Rams, the Bucks, and the Falcons are the last four games for the Saints. The Saints have been the team that I can't figure out this season. I have I've bet on them, I've bet against them, and I've basically been like, if I was keeping track of my win-loss record with the Saints, I would have a losing record picking Saints games this year. It's been that up and down for them. And then finally, Atlanta as Carolina this weekend, that's a win. Then you got Indy. I think I like the Colts in that one. Then you got us, the Bears. And, of course, I think the Bears will win that game. And then they have the Saints. So I think the odds of at least two of those teams losing twice are very good. I like our chances of Seattle losing at least two. I like our chances of the Vikings losing three of the next four because their schedule's kind of brutal here down the stretch. But it's like if we need the Rams to lose twice in the next 4 weeks, I don't like our odds. Because the Rams are starting to play a lot better, kind of like us. They're kind of trending upward and playing better football right now. And they've got the Commanders, the Saints, the Giants, and then a 49er team that might be taking the week off. So there's a very good chance the Rams might win all four of those games. So if that's a hurdle we have to clear, that's the one I'm most worried about as far as well, and then, of course, there's the Bears winning, you know, what, five in a row to end the season? Or six, actually. Six in a row to end, because we're 3-8 when going into that Vikings game. We won that one. We won this past Sunday. So the Bears would have to win their last six games in order to be 9-8 and have an outside chance and need a ton of help to make the playoffs. So I would say that we're in like the 1% or less than 1% range for actually being able to make it, but there's a scenario in which it can happen. And to see where the season started to where it is now, you can't exactly just cleanly write it off. I mean, it's, you know, stranger things have happened. I mean, hell, our AFC counterpart would have to be the Broncos. They started off 1-5. They're one game out of first place right now at 7-6. So, yeah, it's not out of possibility. You can turn these things around. It is a long season. Maybe the Bears are figuring out. I know that means we'll probably have to hang on to Eberflus for next season, but I don't know. We'll have to wait and see on that. But that's the path that needs to be taken in order for the Bears to see postseason football. Not likely to happen, but not out of the realm of possibility. So anyway, that will do it for our news and notes. Let's bring in our guest, Thomas Stargell, from the Battle of Ohio podcast to help us preview Bears-Browns week number 15. Week number 15 has our beloved Chicago Bears traveling out to Cleveland. Take on the Cleveland Browns, who are at 8-5, sitting in the 5 seed right now in the AFC playoff race, and here to help us preview this matchup between the 8-5 Browns and our 5-8 Bears from the Battle of Ohio podcast. It's Thomas Stargell. Thomas, welcome back, man.
Thank you. I love being on your podcast, Larry. Thank you a lot, man. I appreciate it.
So, doing an NFL show this year, I've had a lot of chances to watch and follow what the Browns have been doing this year, and it's been quite a turbulent kind of like up and down season, you know, for you guys. With, you know, sometimes there's the struggle on offense, and then it just seems like just when the offense was starting to figure it out and Deshaun was getting his feet underneath him, the shoulder injury comes in and he's done for the season, and it's almost like you're back to square one with DTR, then he gets hurt, and Flacco is the quarterback the last couple of weeks and all that kind of stuff. Where does that sit right now? Who the Bears playing on Sunday? Are we playing Flacco, or is it going to be DTR?
It's going to be Flacco. You guys, it's Flacco for the rest of the season. Flacco has proven himself to be the starting quarterback for the rest of the season. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy, actually, think about it. Yeah. It's honestly crazy.
Because, you know, last week's game against the Jaguars, you know, the defense really stepped up. They got those three turnovers from Trevor Lawrence, and I think you guys turned at least two of those into touchdowns last week and everything. And I was reading some really interesting stats on the defense this year. Number one overall in the league right now. But of all the things that scare me the most, especially with the way that the Bears struggle sometimes on offense, was being number one on third down, only 29% conversion rate on third down for the Browns, which means that when you get them to third down, they don't get maybe a 1 in 10 or a 3 out of 10 chance of actually converting to get a first down.
Yeah, especially at home. Our defense plays a lot better at home than they do out on the road. That home field advantage is definitely a factor here in Cleveland. That stadium gets loud.
Yeah, I'm hoping that the that Justin Fields doesn't get flashbacks from his last regular season trip to Cleveland. It was his first start ever in 2021. His first start as a quarterback of the Bears, and basically Matt Nagy hung him out to dry that week.
Yeah, that was bad.
Because Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney sacked him four times in the first half. They went into halftime, made zero halftime adjustments, and sacked him five more times in the second half. I think Garrett had half of those, like literally four and a half sacks in that game for a nine sack game, and everybody in Chicago was just like, fire Nagy now. It's like, what the hell? It's like, did we just break our quarterback in one game? Did that just happen? Because those are the kinds of games that quarterbacks never recover from. You know, it's like they see ghosts and they hear footsteps after a day like that. I mean, and it's amazing that Justin Fields, 2+ years later, is still, you know, plugging away and everything, because that first game was an utter nightmare.
I vividly remember that game, actually. I was sitting in dog pound, crowd was chanting Myles Garrett's name. But as I remember, you guys had a lot of offensive line problems, and you know, there's actually more of a threat right now, with you guys going against you guys this week than it would have been back then, considering the fact that although the Browns do have one of the more premier pass rushes in the league, we're pretty banged up right now. So yeah. I don't think that you guys would get as much pressure as y'all would have if y'all played this about 6 or 7 weeks ago, even 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
we're very banged up right now.
I was looking at the injury list, and let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, yeah. And that's just the guys on the roster. That's not counting who you've lost along the way to injured reserve and other I mean, because you guys just lost Grant Delpit for at least 4 weeks, and he's not on this list because he's on injured reserve. Amari Cooper, I guess it was more of a rest day yesterday with the ribs.
Yeah, Cooper's fine.
Yeah, Myles Garrett was rested yesterday. Njoku hasn't practiced yet with a knee injury.
That's concerning.
Yeah. So, but it's like the guys that I'm more wondering about are guys like Denzel Ward and Kareem Hunt. Kareem was limited today with a groin injury. Denzel Ward missed a couple games and is still limited with his shoulder injury. You know, it's like, speaking of DJ Moore, if Denzel Ward's not playing, that's just better for us if one of the best corners in the league is taking the week off.
Greg Newsome and the Browns defense. One thing about the Browns defense is very versatile. We've had injuries on the defense all year, but we just have depth on every single position, especially in the secondary. Although Denzel Ward's been limited, we've been getting great production out of Mario Emerson and Greg Newsome. Denzel Ward hasn't played in, I believe, 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. 4 weeks, probably. So he's probably coming closer to playing than not playing. So hopefully we do get Denzel Ward. I don't want to see DJ Moore on Newsome. How tall is DJ Moore exactly?
I don't think he's very tall at all. Maybe 6'1". He's not a tall. Okay. He's not one of those super long guys. He's pretty stocky.
We play good against those guys. I can exhale.
Yeah, he's like the king of 50-50 balls, so watch out for that.
That's Sunday. Fine. But you know, I mean, it's just that Courtin Sutton just had, like, if you watch the game against the Broncos and the Browns, it's like none of the other receivers did good but Courtin Sutton, and he just outman Greg Newsome. He just outman him. He just took his masculinity and he was like, hey, give me that, and then just stiff arm him. It was like Wilson didn't have a good game, but Courtin Sutton did, and it's just sucking for the Browns with Courtin Sutton.
Yeah, that was a rough game for you guys. That Broncos game. I didn't quite see it going that way, and you know, DTR struggling the way that he did on offense.
Yeah.
Was that the one where he got knocked out?
Yeah,
he got knocked out of that game.
You know, that was weird. You know what's funny about that game, and I know it's not definitely to do with us, but I'm not the biggest Sean Payton fan. Partially because when I was growing up, the Saints thing happened where he was where there was targeting players. When I was watching that game, there was a lot of the Broncos had three personal foul penalties on them for hits, and it was like. Every single one of them, it was weird seeing how the refs reacted to those hits. And like, the DTR hit was one of them. But I remember one, they hit Cooper from behind. It was a late hit. And then the refs, they looked at each other talking. And one of the refs, if I read his lips correctly, can't 100% confirm this, but it looked like he said, "I know what I seen, and that wasn't good." And like he said it like three times. I know what I seen. That's what it looked like to me what he was saying. And then the DTR hit happened like 20 minutes later. And it was just like, I don't know, man. It's just not to me. There's something about it. But you know, it's Sean Payton in Denver. You know, and Sean Payton got a history of that. But that's not here or there.
Right.
Bears, though. I do have a soft spot for the Bears. My father, big Bears fan, going to the game this weekend. It's kind of a tradition of ours. Anytime the Bears and the Browns play, we go. And I actually got a lot of great things to say about the Bears. Okay. So I actually came in prepared for this. And I've actually been thinking about this a lot. I think the Bears are in the greatest position. It's okay that I say that you guys are still kind of rebuilding in a way. I know you guys don't want to hear that, but all right, I think you guys are in the best position to build a football team right now.
Yeah.
Because y'all have a lot of talent. Y'all have a lot of young talent. But also, you know, your quarterback situation isn't Justin Fields. You guys got so many draft picks. Your quarterback situation is really Justin Fields, Caleb Williams, or that boy out of Washington. You guys got a lot of options here. So if you think, we got a chance to get Caleb Williams, we think that he might be a better long-term option than Justin Fields, you can trade Fields for picks or players. Build around your roster, draft Caleb Williams, keep that big contract farther and farther away, and you have a quarterback that could grow with Moore, who I think is one of the great young receivers in this league. I think if y'all manage this well, the Bears are going to be good. It's going to be a great team for years to come.
Yeah, the Bears are in an interesting in a great position, I should say. Ryan Poles has done a really great job of setting the Bears up for the future, and has a really unique opportunity to, you know, to continue to pump young talent into the organization, especially if we trade the number one pick like we did last year. And this year's number one pick will be even more expensive than last year's was when the top of the draft was either C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young. This year, it could be Caleb Williams. It could be Drake May, Penix from Washington. I don't know if he's getting number one overall talk, but, you know, he's out there. That kid Jaden Daniels just won the Heisman and everything. So that number one pick could be extremely valuable because people are trying to jump up to get the guy that they want out of the bunch and everything. And we still don't know how the workouts and the combine and all that stuff is going to affect the draft position. Because if you remember, in 2021, when Fields was coming out of Ohio State, day one after this college football season ended, he was the number two overall pick going to the Jets. And then somehow during the process, Zach Wilson came out of nowhere and he became the number two guy out of Jacksonville. And suddenly There was Justin Fields sitting at 11, the fourth quarterback taken off of the board when the Bears were picking. That was at the start of the offseason. That was not supposed to happen, but there it was, and you know, there it happened and everything. So we don't know how the offseason might change, how this is going to go. But I would prefer that Fields stay as the quarterback. I mean, I love what I'm seeing now, especially since Fields is, you know, really kind of after the struggles in the first month of the season, he's really started to come on. Even with the 4 weeks that he was out with the thumb injury, he comes back against the Lions and he looks good. He looked good last weekend against the Detroit and eliminated the turnovers on top of it. I would prefer to keep doing that and keep building around him, throw a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. into the mix, and him and DJ Moore and Cole Kmet as the three-headed monster to throw passes to. It's like I would much rather have that than starting over with Caleb Williams. It's like I'm not a general manager, so I don't care about the salary cap or starting over with a rookie contract or anything like that. I'd much rather stay the course and go with Justin Fields. And ask any one of our Bear alumni who are, you know, in media and chiming in. Every one of them says the same thing. Stick with Fields. Keep going with him. Build around. Keep adding talent to that, you know. And the thing that's really great about it is that with the way that Poles is setting this thing up and, you know, with all the extra picks and things like that that he's been getting, is that we can keep building. And God forbid if at the end of the fifth-year option for Fields, things still aren't where they need to be, then we'll have that team built up that you plug a quarterback into that, you know, then you're able to hit the ground running with a rookie quarterback, as opposed to what the Panthers just did, which was selling off your future to get your quarterback, and then you got nobody to go around him. You know, you got no one around him, and now, and you have no draft picks for the next couple years to try to build your football team with. So I'd much rather be in the position that the Bears are in. I'm happy with Fields, and I'm hoping that these next few games he can put to bed any doubt about whether or not he should be our guy going forward. So,
you know, he's been playing very well lately. You know, I'm not knocking Fields at all, actually. You know, and here's the thing about Carolina. People always give Browns crap for their trade for Watson. At least Watson's 8-4 as a Cleveland Brown. You know, I mean, look rocky at times. He 8-4. I wish he would slide more instead of taking hits, but that's not here or there. But Carolina made a much worse trade. Because like you said, if Fields looked good, this year's number one pick is worth 10 times more than last year's number one pick.
Right.
There's so many great quarterbacks in this draft. So if Fields look good this year, or even if he just buys you another year, then, you know, why not package that number one pick and give plethora of first-round picks for the next couple of years? Because people are going to trade the farm for that number one pick. People want Caleb Williams or that quarterback out of Washington. You guys are in, like I said, you guys are in the greatest position to ever be in to rebuild, because y'all have great assets now to build around, and y'all got draft capital like a B word. Am I allowed to cuss in your podcast?
I don't care, man. Go for it. Why not?
Y'all got draft capital like a bitch, man. It's insane. like I'm really jealous. Like I said, I got nothing but positive things to say about the Bears. Like, you know, you guys, and, you know, I'm a Browns fan, so like we recently went through this. Except for we had kind of like a harder stretch, obviously.
Yeah.
But we went 0-16. Right. We went 1-15, and back then our general manager stacked up draft capital. I believe it was Tashi Brown, if my memory serves me correctly. But we turned that draft capital into Baker Mayfield. Obviously, he was up and down. But we turned into Baker Mayfield, Nick Chubb, Myles Garrett, David Njoku, Denzel Ward. literally all the players who are making plays for us to the point where we're like, well, we have all these pieces around us. We can trade future draft picks to get a quarterback who ended up being injured, and we ended up with Joe Flacco. I don't know how that happened. But it's just from my past experience, first-round picks, having a plethora of first-round picks comes back and help you because you got to get y'all version of Denzel Ward or y'all version of Miles Garrett or y'all version of whoever. You never know who comes out in this draft. You said Marvin Williams from Ohio State. Man, if you get Marvin Williams, Justin Fields, and DJ Moore, man, y'all going to be nice.
Yeah.
That's well, like, a young core.
When I heard about the trade for number one, it's like, oh, that's cool. We got two ones, two twos, and then DJ Moore. That's where I got excited because two ones, mm-hmm. two twos, those picks may work out. They are not all we get is more chances in the draft to get, you know, guys at the higher end of the draft board. When I saw the DJ Moore was the throw in there, I was like, oh, that's where Carolina messed up because they just sold their best player for Bryce Young. Because I mean, yeah. all I've heard in their 1-12 struggles this season is how Bryce Young has nobody to throw the ball to. It's like Adam Thielen for all of his, you know, he's a veteran, he's a stud, he can still get it done even though he's in the twilight of his career now. But he's not DJ Moore that's winning 50-50 balls, that's getting open, that is dangerous in the open field. If you get that guy, you know, he's that guy you can throw that 3 yard out to and then he can get 12 yards for a first down kind of guy. You know, he's that one that will keep fighting for that extra yard and then break through a tackle and get the first down and everything. It's like, that's a guy that a rookie quarterback needs. And Ryan Poles insisted, if we're doing this, I want DJ Moore. My quarterback needs a number one receiver. And they were like, okay, we want the quarterback so bad, we'll sell that number one receiver. And they've probably regretted that every moment since then. Like, cause they didn't get anybody else in the draft to be a wide receiver or anything like that. And it just didn't, it did not work out, and Frank Reich turned out not to be the right guy. They fire him mid-season and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just – and then, of course, the rumors about how Reich and the coaching staff wanted C.J. Stroud instead of Bryce Young, and it was the owner who made them take him and everything. It's like, man, it is a mess out there in Carolina, and they got to hire somebody else this year or at the end of the season. So, yeah, it's ugly. Out there, but it's like Poles played this. He played this so perfect, and he's got the Bears set up to just keep adding these young studs, not just keep adding bodies, but to add first round picks, second round picks, and so he gets multiple shots at the, you know, the higher end of the draft board. So he's done an outstanding job, and no matter how this season goes, the one person I'm sure that's coming back next year is Ryan Poles. I just think he's done too well, and we've seen too much from the guys that he's brought in for him to not be the one that survives.
Wow. I'm not going to lie. I'm somebody who my favorite position in football, NFL, is receiver. Mm-hmm. The position I played in high school and everything, I love it. And you talk about DJ Moore like that, I'm literally gushing because I cannot wait to see him play on Sunday. I really can't wait to see these. Like, dude, I said this before we started. Like, I've won a lot of money betting on DJ Moore this season. I have. Like, dude, I love that guy. Like, he is like we haven't had a great receiver in Cleveland since Josh Gordon. I mean, Cooper, you nice. Cooper's nice. He's nice. He's solid. He's solid. But you know. Yeah, I mean, like, DJ Moore, though, he's a truth. Man, that boy is a truth. I can't wait to see him play on Sunday. I can't wait to see him play on Sunday, man. God, he's nice.
So we mentioned we mentioned at the top that, you know, it's kind of been an up-and-down year for you guys, and now I've got the schedule in front of me. You start with the win over Cincinnati. You know, you beat up on Burrow and the Bengals, and you know, had Jamar Chase in the in the locker room afterwards, like, man, we just lost to some elves, man. I can't believe we just lost to these elves, you know. And then on Monday night the following week, that's when you guys lose Nick Chubb to that crazy knee injury. Thankfully, it wasn't as serious as they initially thought it was, to the point where you will get him back next year, as opposed to wondering whether or not that knee injury was career-ending, especially since he's been through something like that before in college.
Yeah. But,
the thing about that Pittsburgh game was that it was the offense that let you down, but not because the offense couldn't score, but because they gave two touchdowns to the Steelers' defense in that one. You had a pick six earlier in the game, and then the game winner was a strip sack from T.J. Watt running it in for a touchdown. If not for that, the defense did its job holding the Steelers to, what, 12 points or something like that. But it was the offense and their mistakes that let you down there. But you rebound by destroying Tennessee the week after. Then you have that game in Baltimore. And what happened in the Baltimore game? Because that was the one where it's like you guys, it basically allowed like 18 points on the entire season. And then Lamar Jackson comes in, he runs for two and throws for two, and the offense is nothing. 28-3, you guys lose that game.
You know, okay, dang, man, it's crazy you say that, because like, I'm having like crazy flashbacks. That game was crazy. So that was the game where we first started to realize that Watson was injured. And it's actually crazy looking back on it, because Watson was hurt. He hurt himself during the Titans.
Right.
And so we didn't know about it. They kind of the team kind of kept it hush hush. You know, I mean, it was just weird. It was very weird. The handling of his injuries was bad in the first place anyway. But he was hurt. He couldn't lift his arm above his head at all. And so they was like, oh, it's just a strain. It'll be okay. It's whatever. And, like, they kept it really, really secret. And it was like, all right, Watson, if you could throw the ball on Sunday, then you could play. He couldn't throw the ball 5 yards. So it was just like, you know, you can't go. You know, so he's like, I can't go. People in the city thought he was faking his injury. He was trying to take his money and leave. That's a real thing that people have been saying, that he's faking his injury. It's not factual at all. He was severely hurt before the Ravens game. So he didn't play because he was hurt. And then the next game against the Colts, if my memory is serving me correctly. Who did he play next?
Well, you played Baltimore, and you're reminding me that was the game that DTR started, wasn't it?
Yeah, DTR started his first game in that game.
I remember now, because that was the one where he found out at, like, breakfast on Sunday morning that he was starting.
Yeah, like he said 20 minutes before kickoff, or 45 minutes before kickoff, when he figured out that he was starting.
Yeah, so you had the bye week after that. Then you had then you throw PJ Walker in there, and he helps you beat the 49ers.
That was a crazy game.
Yeah, then you go to Indianapolis, and that was the game where there was a bunch of controversy at the end about this was a pass interference call. No, it wasn't. The referees got more credit for getting the Browns the win than the Browns did, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it was a crazy finish, the 39-38 win for the Browns in that one. Was that the game where Watson came back and then, like, he left with a concussion, could have come back and then didn't? Wasn't that the Indy game?
Yeah. He came in, and then he played like he did. He had four throws that game. And on the fourth throw, he got hit. And then Kevin was like, dude, sit your ass down. You're not healthy. I think, you know, I was talking to Cal about this. I think the only reason why Washington played that game was because of the enormous amount of pressure that he was under to prove himself that he's still a good quarterback.
Yeah.
And I just think that that's the whole layer of it. And, like, you know, you might see my tweet, but you know what I mean? Like, I've been going back and forth with a lot of Cleveland fans about this.
I have seen that, you know, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's frustrating. Some of the stuff that I guess my problem is that I guess my problem with it is that there's certain things that you can go after him after. Mm-hmm. But, like, sometimes people are so mean to him, it's literally unfair. And I thought that when he was hurt, I thought people was unfair to his injury. And I felt like he only came back. I don't think he would have came back and played that Colts game if it was a regular situation. But I think that he felt so overwhelmed to prove himself that he came back early to try and test out that shoulder. And I don't think that shoulder was ready.
Right. So after the Indy game, PJ Walker finishes that one. You go to Seattle, and it was a last-minute touchdown. You guys lost that one. But in Seattle, not many people win football games in Seattle. It's a very tough place to win football games. Yeah. But after that, you go on a three-game winning streak. You beat Arizona 27-0 the following week. And then that crazy game in the rematch with the Ravens in Baltimore. Personally, I didn't give y'all a snowball's chance in hell of winning that one. The Ravens had just come off of like beating up on the Lions the week before or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, beat them 37-6 or whatever that was. And, you know, they get out to an early lead. I was like, well, this is going according to the script as far as I'm concerned. And then I come back and find out, oh yeah, the Browns won that game. I was like, wait, what? They won? It's like, you know, because the few portions of that game that I was watching is like, they were really giving it to you guys. And then turns around, you know, Deshaun Watson, busted shoulder and all, you know, rallies you guys to get that last field goal from Hopkins at the game winner. And that was a crazy week because that was one of six games that won with a field goal literally at the last second. Six games ended that way. That week, and that was one of them. And then, of course, the announcement Monday morning, Watson's done for the season because, you know, that shoulder that he threw those touchdown passes on, like, yeah, that thing needs surgery, like, now. So he's done.
Yeah.
He's done for the year. And, you know, he played on that busted shoulder, you know, and helped us get a win over the Ravens, which this year has been really hard to do. In 13 games, only three teams have beaten the Ravens, and you guys were one of them.
Yeah, don't tell the Cleveland fans that he did that because they don't believe that happened. You know what's crazy about that? No. You know what's crazy about that game was like somebody like me who has defended Watson this whole year. I finally felt relief. I was like, yes, he arrived. Now everybody just shut the hell up, you know. And then he's out for the season. He's just like, oh.
Yeah.
It was like the biggest like gut punch in the world. Like, man, that took the air out of everything.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what like the bear equivalent would be. Like, you know, yay, we finally got him back, only for him to get hurt. I'm sure that there's an example or two that I'm not thinking of right now. But I get what you're I mean, actually, we can even, you know, take it back a few weeks this season. Justin Fields, number one, has that great game against the Broncos, but the defense kind of lets us down, collapses in the fourth quarter. We lose that game. But he comes back the following week and talk about winning money off DJ Moore. How about 8 catches for 230 yards and 3 touchdowns against the Commanders? You probably won big money that week.
That was the game I won big money. That was the game. Yes.
You know, and then Fields had 4 touchdowns and no picks in that one. Yeah. And then the following week against the Vikings, he suffers that thumb injury and he's out for a month. And this was during the portion of the schedule that I was looking forward to, especially with the way that the year started. For the Bears, how bad they struggled. We didn't have a healthy – we had in, like, the first 7 games, 6 different starting offensive lines. I mean, we're constantly shuffling guys in and out for injuries and all that kind of stuff. And now we're finally getting the offensive line stabilized, and he goes down, and we've got these games that were winnable. And we went like 2-4 in this 6-game stretch that I was looking forward to. And I would really love to know, if we had a healthy Justin Fields, what does that portion of the season look like? Because they were what I called winnable games. There was this portion between like starting with that Vikings game and ending with the that game before the first Lions game. There was like 5 games in there that were winnable. I wasn't saying flat out the Bears are going to win. I was like, well, we have a chance against these teams to do well. And in that stretch, we went 2-4 because we had an undrafted rookie quarterback starting for us during that time. So it was I would love to know what that would look like if Fields was healthy all that time, what kind of position the Bears would be in right now if he was out there and everything. But he's come back and he's doing well now, and the Bears aren't out of it yet. We need to win every game and get a lot of help, but at least there's some kind of hope at this point of the season. The Bears, first time in a long time, are playing meaningful games in December, so I can't complain too much, I guess.
Ooh, y'all beat the Lions last week. Y'all did beat the Lions last week.
Yeah, we did.
I did win last week, yeah.
So, but that first game against the Lions, that was his first game back. I was terrified of what that might look like, just because, the week before we'd struggled against the Panthers, the worst team in the league. We struggled to score 16 points against that team and everything. I was like, what's it going to look like when we play the Lions in Detroit? Are you kidding me? Right now, I was like, I don't want Fields coming back for this game. He had practiced before the Carolina game. I want him to start against the Panthers. He can make mistakes and knock the rust off against the Panthers. I don't want him going in there against the Lions. He makes a mistake against the Lions, that could hurt, that could end the game for us. It's like we might not be able to recover from the mistake that gets made because he hasn't played in a month. But he played like a champ. And, that was Eberflus that let us down in that one. But, he beat the Vikings the following week. We beat the Lions in the rematch this past Sunday. And, I'm excited to see what could happen against the Browns on Sunday.
Yeah, the Browns are very vulnerable right now with their injuries. Derek Fields, he's a gamer, man. I remember his performance against Clemson that year in the, the Orange Bowl? He does this thing where he got this, I can't explain it. Anybody who's ever an athlete knows it. But, certain athletes have this, gear where they get in the zone and they're just locked in. And, certain athletes have it, certain athletes don't. But he has that gear where he gets, locked in. And when he wants something bad enough, he kind of goes use Dragon Ball Z term, Super Saiyan. Justin Fields has that gear, man. I mean, sometimes he finds it, sometimes he don't. He's a younger quarterback, so sometimes it's harder for young quarterbacks to find that gear. When he's locked in, Justin Fields is elite. I mean that because he can throw that ball, but he's just as athletic as young Lamar Jackson.
Oh, sure.
So if you have, one thing about young Lamar Jackson is Lamar couldn't consistently throw an accurate ball. Justin Fields could throw an accurate ball.
Right.
Especially when he's in his zone. And when he's throwing like that, it's almost impossible to guard. And I kind of want to, if he gets to that level again, y'all beat us.
Yeah.
All seriousness, y'all gonna beat us, especially with a depleted our secondary's fine, but there's not gonna be, there's not gonna be as much pressure on Justin Fields as you think it would be, considering the fact that Myles Garrett is banged up. And we got some injuries on our defensive line. So there might be vulnerability there against the Browns. You guys did just beat the Lions. In their own respect, is a very good team. Even though they are a division rival, they are a very good team. You guys beat a great team last week.
Yeah.
This is the hardest game I got left. So y'all beat us. Y'all might be able to climb back into the NFC. The NFC is not really that great.
Bro. Yeah, I mean that's what I've been saying for the last few weeks. I mean, it's been crazy watching how it's been going down this year in the NFL. It's like it's seemingly from the beginning in the NFC, it's always been the Cowboys, the Eagles, the 49ers, and everybody else is, you know, fighting for, yeah, you know, for their, yeah, own playoff spots. The NFC South is an absolute mess. They have a losing team in first place right now. But it's like in the NFC, because of what's been going on, you kind of have this logjam now because the 7th seed is Green Bay. They're 6-7. And then there are four other 6-7 teams right behind them, with the Bears at 5-8 just behind them. Now, we, like I said, we need a lot of help in order to get into the playoff race. But like you just said, if we can get past the Browns this weekend, we got Arizona and Atlanta at home outside in December. We got these two Southern/Western dome teams coming to Soldier Field in the butthole of December. That's not going to be pretty for either one of those teams. And then we have our rematch with the Packers in Lambeau to close up the season. It's like if things go right, or if things go well, I should say, that game could be for the last playoff spot in the NFC. Because
that is insane, man. Like, yeah, like AFC is just like, the AFC is just a bloodbath.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy because, like, it's just like the AFC, like, I guess the other thing that's really confusing to me is the best two teams in the league are in the NFC. But, like, you're like, man, nobody's better than the 49ers and the Eagles and honestly the Cowboys, the way they're playing.
Yeah.
But, like, the AFC just have all of the good teams. Like they're not like juggernauts in the AFC, but there are a lot of very good teams in the AFC.
Right.
Why the NFC is just a whole bunch of bad teams and these three good teams and
right,
some mediocre teams, some above average teams. Yeah, I mean, it's great for y'all.
Yeah. The AFC is the stronger conference top to bottom. The NFC is very top heavy. And, yeah, and, you know, we have the cream at the top and then everything else kind of underneath them. But it's like the what's been interesting to watch in the AFC is the logjam that there is right now underneath you guys at five. You're 8-5. You're the 5 seed right now. But underneath you is Pittsburgh and Indianapolis at 7-6. And then like three or four more teams at 7-6 right under neath them. So it's like there is no margin of error right now in the AFC.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, you have to keep winning if you want to stay in the conversation and if you want to, you know, make up some ground. Like this weekend, somebody's going to lose a spot because Indy and Pittsburgh are playing each other this weekend. So somebody is going to take a hit there, which could leave a team like the Texans or the Bills or the Bengals to jump up ahead of them to get back into the 6th or 7th seed, back into the playoff race. It's been the one really interesting aspect of like the last month is kind of watching the AFC kind of meet itself in the middle, because before you had the Chiefs, you had the Dolphins, they were, you know, and the Ravens that were kind of, you know, sitting at the top here with their really great records. But now the Chiefs have lost like 3 out of their last 4. They're 8-5 right now. If the season ends today, the Chiefs are a wild card team. When was the last time that happened?
Hey, you know? Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
Dude, this is love football.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I do, man. I really, really do. And, you know, but it's just been crazy watching this all unfold, and we still got a month left to go. So much could happen. And the way that the AFC and NFC playoff picture looks right now could be completely different a month from now. These teams that are clinging to playoff berths, they lose a game, they're going to fall right out of it and open the door for somebody else to come in. So, I mean, it's going to get real exciting in this last month, especially with so many people kind of stuck in the middle there fighting for those last few spots on both sides of the in the conferences. So this game is important because you guys want to stay where you're at in the 5 seed. and everything's like, I don't know if you're going to be able to catch Baltimore for the division, but you can definitely hang on to your spot in the playoffs. And the Bears need this if they even want to, because I think if we lose this weekend, we're done. As far as any, I mean, it's a long shot at best right now to make the playoffs. But if we lose this weekend, we're done. We're done. So we're in playoff mode now. We have to win. We don't need to win. We have to. We absolutely have to keep winning. You guys, you know, don't want to. You can maybe afford to lose one game in this next month, but I don't think this is the one that you want to lose. So
no, it's not. It's not. You know, it was funny because we actually would talk. You know, it's crazy. The Jazz with a game that I didn't think that we'd get.
Right.
That was a big win. But you know, I mean, you know, you're the AFC. Just like get me the 10 wins. Just give me the 10 wins.
Right.
And then you're like that end of the season. With all due respect to you guys, but you know, the Browns have beaten at their 8 wins, 6 of them are against teams above 500. That's more than any other team in the league. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, so, you know, you look at the schedule. I remember a couple of weeks ago we were saying, you know, just win one of the next 3, and then you have the Bears, the Jets, and the Bengals on the schedule.
Right.
Just win those 3 games and win a couple of these other games, and then you're in playoffs for sure. And so now we're at 8-5. The goal is 10 wins. So you know, I mean, so even we do lose, margin of error does get smaller.
Yeah.
But with this AFC, man, this AFC is insane. I just feel more comfortable with 11 wins.
Right. Than 10 wins, for sure.
Honestly.
For sure. I mean, just like I said, right now, the Steelers and the Colts are in it right now at 7-6.
Yep.
There are 4 teams below them also at 7-6, which means there could be a lot of leapfrogging and hurdling going on. If you lose a game and somebody that you're tied with wins one, now they're ahead of you and all. It's like, never mind tiebreakers and all that kind of stuff. When their record is better than yours, they're ahead of you, period. So, but yeah, you guys got you got us this weekend. You got the Texans on the road next weekend. The Texans have been really good at home this year. Then you got the Jets, and then you finish with the Bengals. So yeah, if you can afford to lose one, I don't think this is the one. You guys need to win this game.
Well, maybe it is because you guys are an NFC opponent. So as far as tiebreakers,
yeah, you know, you're right. Actually,
losing to you guys will literally kill none of our tiebreakers. We are pretty we're pretty set on these tiebreakers right now. So that's also positive. Like, we have a lot. And here goes another tiebreaker for you. If you take a little glance at the Baltimore Ravens schedule, if the Browns and Ravens were to end with the same record, the Browns would win the division. So we're 2 games behind the Ravens. So that would mean the Ravens will lose twice at least. But the Browns and Ravens were to end with the same record. The Browns have enough tiebreakers to actually beat out the Ravens. So, you know, and they have a lot of tiebreakers over a lot of those teams behind us. We beat the Steelers, we beat the Colts.
Yep.
We beat the Bengals.
Right.
So we have the advantage over those teams right now. So we kind of control our own destiny. So, I mean, we're in a very good spot right now. But as a Browns fan who's seen nothing but misery for pretty much his entire life, for example, the Browns went out, they went 12 games. If the Browns went out, they went 12 games, right? There has literally never been a moment in my entire life that the Browns won 12 games.
Well, you're not old enough, Thomas, because I grew up watching the Browns win 12 games with Marty Schottenheimer and Bernie Kosar and and guys like that in the late half of the 80s when they had those epic AFC championship games with the Broncos. That was 8 and 9 year old Larry watching those games. That's how I grew up watching the NFL.
You know what's crazy about that? It's not like I'm not old at all.
Right.
I'm young, but I'm not that young. I turned 30 in February.
Right.
It's not like I haven't been on earth long enough to at least be an adult. Like, I turned 30 in February.
Right.
You're telling me in 30 years, y'all could win 12 games?
Yeah, well, they've
only won 11 games once.
Yeah. They got close in, what was it, 2020? They went 11-5 or something like that, so...
Yeah, that was the most wins I've seen in my entire life by my football league.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least you didn't start out the way that I did, Thomas, because the very first team that I followed from start to finish, from week one to the end of the season, was the 85 Bears.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, and the one game that they lost was a Monday night game, which was past my bedtime. So in 1985, I did not see the Bears lose a single football game. Not one. Wow. They won every game that I watched them play, including the playoffs and the Super Bowl. And then year two, where I was following the Bears in 86, they went 14-2. So talk about ruining expectations for a lifetime, where in the first, I watched the Bears play 31 times, 32 times in 2 years. They won they went 29-3 in two seasons in the regular season. That's, yeah. They haven't come close to anything like that. I mean, they've had a couple of playoff runs here and there. They went to the Super Bowl back in 06 and everything. But watching them not lose a game for an entire season was just awful way to kind of set expectations for the future. Just like, oh, yeah, the Bears are playing. They're going to win, of course. They're going to win every game. And, yeah, that has not happened much over the last decade or so, especially since we fired Lovie. So it's just yeah, it's. I feel your pain, bro. I do.
Man. Hey, I'm just gonna let you know. Like in 10 years, there's gonna be a Patriots fan. You're gonna be doing a Patriots fan podcast, and a Patriots fan gonna be like, "Man, for 20 years of my life."
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
that's the thing about like being my age. I you turn 30 in February. I turn 46 in March, so I'm old enough to remember what it was like when teams like the Packers and the Patriots were the worst team in the league every single year when I was growing up. They were terrible. That was an instant W on the schedule for the Bears twice a year playing against the Green Bay Packers. They were tough games, but we won them all. And aside from the Patriots going to the Super Bowl to play the Bears in Super Bowl 20, they were the team drafting at the top of the board every single year for the longest time. So it's like I saw what it was like for them to be the awful worst team in the league, only to watch them, get Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, or with the Patriots, they get Brady, and all of a sudden they got two decades of dominance, and they're in the playoffs and going to Super Bowls and all that kind of stuff year in and year out. It's like I didn't grow up with this. It's like what they're going through now, this is what I grew up with. Watching them be mediocre and struggle to make it to the playoffs and all that kind of stuff, this is what I'm used to, or this is what I grew up watching when it came to the Packers and the Patriots. Like, even though it was sustained two-decade-long success, it was still weird to me because I grew up watching the Packers be terrible. I grew up watching the Patriots be terrible. So watch them be dominant for 20-plus years, it never felt right to me. Having them struggle and be losers so far – this season, especially the Patriots, 3-10 right now. But, the Packers are 6-7 and everything. That's my wheelhouse. That's what I'm used to, like, growing up. That's what makes sense to me and everything. So that's what's kind of been like, feels like this has been like a get-right year for me as far as the NFL goes with the Packers and the Patriots kind of back at the bottom where I grew up watching them live and everything. So. And also watching the Browns be a playoff team. I grew up, the Browns were in the playoffs every year. They were always one of the better teams in the AFC. So watching them make playoff runs and be good and get wins on a regular basis, that's what I grew up getting used to.
You know what's crazy about that? My father, he became a Bears fan because of those Bears teams.
Sure.
Dominant Bears teams. But, my father, because he grew up in Youngstown, Ohio. I grew up in Cleveland. But when he was in Youngstown, Ohio, so Youngstown, I guess it's not quite Cleveland, so he started rooting for his own team. He rooted for Bears because not only were they good, but they were a Midwest team. When you're in Ohio, you know, you always feel slighted by the New York, the L.A., and the Miamis, right?
Sure, sure.
So Chicago, even though it's like one of the biggest cities, you know, in the world, Chicago never feels like New York or L.A. It just doesn't. It just feels like the Midwest. You guys feel like one of us. Like, when I'm in Chicago, I feel like I'm still, like, home.
Right.
And it's just bigger. It's just bigger. That's what it is. It's just big. It's very big. But that was my father that fell in love with the Bears because they were a dominant team from the Midwest. And that, you know, and he kind of stayed loving them for that reason because they were a dominant team from the Midwest, you know. So he also used to Youngstown. He's just like, you know, we didn't like Cleveland when we were in Youngstown. Like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. If the Penguins weren't getting it done at YSU, then there was nothing else going on in that town, right?
Look, I'm not a big Youngstown person.
Well, because I went to Western Illinois for college. Yeah. So Youngstown State was in our conference. So we played Youngstown.
FCS.
We played them every single year in football and everything. And I was there.
Oh, dude.
I was there the last year that Jim Tressel was still the head coach before he left for Ohio State.
Wow.
So yeah,
I was in Youngstown State for a year. So I'm very familiar. I actually seen Carson Wentz play when he was in college. We threw popcorn at him. Yeah, we threw popcorn at him. he threw three touchdowns at us. So
right.
Okay, we're even. I guess we're even.
There you go. Well, I was, I don't know if I told you this before, but when I was in broadcasting when I was in college, and we did the football games. We did a student production of the football games, and I was on the announce team that called Tony Romo's last college football game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Eastern Illinois. Wow. Eastern Illinois came to town to play my Leathernecks in the first round of the playoffs, and let's just say that day didn't go well for Tony, like, at all, bro. Yeah.
Mm.
You know, even though he came into town, the fresh 1AA Heisman winner, which is the Walter Payton Award in FCS. Yeah, mm-hmm. we beat up on them like 48-9 was the final score. That one. Yeah, Romo was he was throwing picks left and right, man. We were all over that cat all day long. It was so much fun.
Well, that sounds like classic Tony Romo, throwing picks left and right.
Yep. Yep. So but Thomas, yeah. this has been great, man. Love having you on. How do you what do you think's gonna happen on Sunday? You think you guys are gonna be all right enough to pull it out?
Yeah, I do think the Browns do eke it out. I think that home field advantage made a difference. I think we were playing your stadium. I think that it might be a different story. But I don't think it's going to be a blowout at all. I do think that you guys are going to – in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if you guys win actually. But I do think the Browns eke it out. I think the Browns – you know, I'm going to go with I don't know. A lot of people are taking it under this game. I'm actually going to take it over because I was looking at the weather. The weather really isn't that bad. So I'll go to Browns 24-21 to win by a field goal. Because I do think the Bears are going to score a lot of points. They're going to score a couple touchdowns this game.
What's the line?
I believe.
What's the over-under?
I think it's 30-something. Here, let me look it up. I'm going to look at it real quick.
Okay.
Let me pull it real quick.
Because with the way the Bears' defense has been playing, especially these last few weeks, I would probably take the under. Like
Everybody's taking the under.
I was thinking something like seven. Unless there are, I think the only way we get to 24-21 is with defensive touchdowns, or maybe even a special teams touchdown throw in there somewhere. But if it's all offenses, I'm thinking something like 17-13 is probably going to be the final score in this one.
Let's see.
So I think that would probably be the under.
Let me check real quick. Why am I not showing? Man, come on.
I got Yahoo Sports shows 38.5.
Okay, yeah. Everybody I know is taking under on that. I really don't know, man. I really don't know what I'm gonna get, honestly. So I'm gonna stay away from the over under, but I'm gonna pick the Browns main line. The Browns can get up. Yeah, 38.5 is what I got. Browns are 3-point favorites.
Right. Okay. Well,
I might do that. I might take those points from the Bears, though.
Okay.
I think the game is a field goal. Wait, hold on. If the Bears lose by a field goal, see, I'm kind of new to betting.
Right.
This became legal in Ohio. So if the Bears lose by 3, and I took the 3 points, would I win?
You know what, dude? I've never really understood that whole thing what the line is or how that works or anything. I've always stayed away from that. Over under makes sense to me, but +6, -6, you always lose me when you start talking about that stuff. But it's like I don't know what that means, but whatever.
Look, I'm not the biggest better in the world. I just do it here and there when I'm doing. I don't like doing football bets, but you'd be surprised how little money I put down. Like it's like literally probably like $10 a week, if even.
Right.
It's not anything.
Well, I've thought about playing those like same game parlays, but that feels like that feels like the first snort of meth to me. Like if I do it once and I win, then I'm not going to be able to stop doing it, and then I'm going to have a problem. So like I'm just not going to start. I was like, I'll just be like, yeah, I probably could have won a bet like that, but, you know, that would have put the monkey on my back. The next thing I know, I'm betting 5-6 parlays trying to win back the money I lost last weekend and things like that. I'm like, nah, bro, I'm good. I'll leave the betting to the folks that can either afford it or, can't live without it kind of thing. It's like, I'm not going to be I can't do it. I can't. I'd love to, but I can't, so.
It's all about being smart, honestly. It's all about being smart.
Yeah, for real.
I like that.
So. All right. Well, Thomas, appreciate having you on, man, and looking forward to the game on Sunday and how it affects the future for the rest of the season for the Browns and for the Bears to see how it all unfolds. And tell the people where they can keep up with you in the meantime.
Yeah, you guys can follow me on TikTok is where I got my biggest following, on Thomas J Network. We talk sports in there. You can also check out my podcast with Kyle. We will be filming soon, the Battle of Ohio podcast. You can find that. We actually have the podcast on Kyle's channel. It's at Kyle Phelps. So check us out there. Or you can follow me on Instagram or Twitter. You want to tweet at me if you like. If you didn't like anything I said, you always tweet at me at T_star94. And that's also my Instagram. That's also my Instagram handle.
Right. Thank you. And since we had to cut off the StreamYard audio, and we had to do this over the phone, Thomas has my number now, and he says he will be live texting me during the game, so that should be interesting depending on how the game is going. So stay tuned for updates on how the text exchange goes on the review episode on Monday. So we'll see how that goes. Thomas, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. We'll see you again real soon.
No problem.
Thomas Stargell from the Battle of Ohio podcast. Love having him on. Very energetic guy. He's very passionate about his team, too, which is commendable. He really loves his Browns, and he's very excited about this game on Sunday. He about talked my ear off before we started recording about how much he was looking forward to this. He says his dad's a big Bears fan as well. So it's a divided household, if you will. I think he said they're going to this one together in Cleveland. So that should be interesting. And as you guys heard me say at the end of the interview, because we had to switch over to the phone just to be able to conduct the interview tonight, that he'll be live texting me during the game, which means he'll be texting me from the stadium, which is bananas. But we'll see how that goes, and I'll report that to you guys during the review episode on Monday. So, keys to the game. Let's go ahead and get this bad boy wrapped up. And first key that we have, you know, with the defenses on both sides playing as well as they are, or especially the Browns have been playing this well all season, banged up or not. This was a team that last week forced four turnovers against the Jaguars, three interceptions of Trevor Lawrence, was able to turn those into points last week. The Bears are going, number one, minimize the mistakes. We can't afford to do that against the Browns this week. We can't afford to have, I mean, we managed to not turn the ball over at all against the Lions, and look how well that went. We need to have a repeat performance of that this week against the Browns. We don't want to minimize the turnovers. We want to eliminate them, period. We want to minimize the penalties, eliminate the turnovers. That cannot happen this week against this football team. So the offensive line really needs to be on it with the holding penalties and things like that. And Justin and company need to protect the football. No leaving the ball hanging out there. Always be aware of where you are on the field. Somebody sneaking up on you, kind of thing. You just got to have that that instinct to protect yourself and the football at all times. And speaking about that, you know, the defense is, as I was saying, you know, playing so well. Points are likely to be at a premium this week. You guys heard me and Thomas talking about what we think the scores are going to be. Like, I really feel confident in the 17-13 area, unless, like I said, there are defensive touchdowns that get thrown in there, then it could inflate the score like it did against Jacksonville, where, you know, it's like offensively, the offense did not drive down the field to score 31 points. The offense had extra opportunities with the football because of the turnovers. So we want to avoid that at all costs. But when the Bears have the football, if we manage to get it into the red zone, we got to close, because that's the one thing the Browns are actually not good at on defense, is they are 28th in red zone defense, allowing a touchdown 67.6% of the time, which means that just a little bit over two out of every three trips to the red zone, they give up a touchdown. So when we get into the red zone, we have to be aggressive and go for the end zone, because the Browns, you know, the few times that they are in the red zone, they fold. You get them in there, you've got a two out of three chance of scoring a touchdown. So when we get in the red zone, if we're lucky enough to get there, we got to close. We got to put the ball in the end zone, period. And then more specifically, we have to be productive on first and second down on offense this week, because the Browns are number one in the league in third down conversions this season, in as far as allowing them. They only allow a first down on third down 29% of the time. I think I mentioned that at the start of the interview with Thomas. So we need to be in third and five or fewer to increase our chance of success. If we're constantly in there, third and eight, third and 12, you know, that's where the minimizing penalties thing really comes in. Not having to start with first and 15 or first and 20 because of a holding penalty and things like that. We need to be productive on first and second down, so we're dealing with, you know, third and four, third and two, third and one, as opposed to third and eight, third and nine, third and 10, God forbid, to increase our options, our ability to convert on third down, because the Browns are the stingiest team in the league on third down. So 29% of the time they allow a third down conversion, which is three out of every 10 tries. And if you, you know, keep your eye on stats like I like to at the end of football games, three out of 10 could be an entire football game. And that is not a good conversion rate. you want to be at about anywhere from like 40 to 50 percent. That would be considered a good game on third down. 3 out of 10, that's a bad game. You probably lost. So, you know, so be productive on first and second down to minimize what it was, what it is we need to do to convert on third. We need to close the deal in the red zone because that's the one thing the Browns aren't good at on defense, allowing a touchdown 67% of the time. And we need to minimize penalties and eliminate turnovers in this football game. We don't want to keep giving the ball back to the Browns. So, because if it's Flacco that's out there, he's a wily veteran with Njoku, with Amari Cooper, even with banged up Jerome Ford and Kareem Hunt. They're still, they have talent. They haven't been that productive points-wise, but they have the talent to blow this thing wide open if we're not careful. So we can't let this thing get away from us. We need to be the one inflicting the mistakes, enforcing the mistakes, making them pay for the mistakes, as opposed to having it done to us the other way around. So there you got it, guys. That is going to do it for the Week 15 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. Come back on Monday, when you will hear how the text exchange between myself and Thomas went. Was it good? Are the Bears still alive in the playoff race? Did we clear that first hurdle, with the other three yet to come, with Arizona, Atlanta, and Green Bay to finish out the year? Come back on Monday and find out how it all went down. And until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been Bears Talk Underground.